This is the IBJ podcast for the week of Monday, April the 5th, 2021. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. If you're listening to this on Monday the 5th, you know, of course, that yesterday was Easter Sunday. I went to my first church service in more than a year on Sunday morning, albeit an outside service. And in the afternoon, my wife, son, and I went to our first indoor family gathering since Christmas 2019. Now, just to be clear, I and the rest of the adults in my family have been fully vaccinated, which is one of the few fringe benefits right now of being over 50 years old. Now, of course, last week, Indiana officials swung wide the doors to the state's vaccination clinics to anybody age 16 or over, although it will take some weeks or months to get everybody scheduled, vaccinated, and fully up to snuff. At the moment, there are about 1.2 million fully vaccinated individuals in Indiana. That's about 21% of the 5.3 million people aged 16 and over who are eligible for the vaccine. Now, considering the very first dose of vaccine in Indiana was jabbed into somebody's arm in mid-December, that number sounds pretty impressive. But compared to other states, which each have their own strategies for rolling out the vaccine, Indiana's record is decidedly mixed. With any undertaking this large, your relative success depends on how you want to slice and dice the statistics. But on at least a couple of metrics, Indiana ranks quite poorly among all states, and in others, it's around the middle of the pack. IBJ healthcare reporter John Russell has been following this mammoth effort and has a story in this latest edition of IBJ taking stock of the state's performance so far. And he's our guest for this week's edition of the podcast. Here's our conversation on Indiana's sometimes controversial strategy, how the state ranks nationwide, and how long it could be before we all get back to some semblance of our pre-pandemic lives. I'm pleased to welcome back to the podcast John Russell, who covers healthcare for IBJ. Thanks for making time today.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks.
So as usual, I'm going to start by talking about myself. So I got my second shot, a Pfizer vaccine, on Friday at the Indianapolis Urban League, in a large room that had been set up as a clinic. I'm 95% sure it was run by Walmart. I saw a lot of Walmart signage, but setting up the appointment was easy. I felt like I was in and out, with the exception of the 15 minutes I had to stick around just to make sure I wasn't going to keel over. So it is my impression that everything is going swimmingly. Is that the case statewide?
It's a mixed record, really. But I, too, shared your experience of getting my first shot. Actually, I get my second shot next week. I got mine at St. Vincent main campus. And like yours, there's a lot of temporary feel about these vaccine clinics, how long they'll be here, how they're set up. But I went through the process in less than a half hour. I was in and out, and everyone was very professional, very smooth. So on a personal experience level, I think it was great. But when you step back and look at the big picture and how Indiana has performed compared to other states, there's high points and a few low marks too. Everyone I've talked to has said it's going great, but some other states are doing better.
So we have 50 states, and I assume the District of Columbia and the U.S. territories, they're administering vaccines to their residents. I assume then that we also have 50 different ways of doing it. Leaders of each state got to choose how they wanted to roll out the vaccine. Is that right?
That's right. So the federal government controls supply. They decide how much each state gets. They ship it out. And then from that point on, each state gets to oversee the process, who gets in front of the line by occupation, by health, by age, and lots of other different ways.
So outline Indiana's approach for anybody that hasn't been paying attention.
Yes, it rolled out in various tiers. The first tier was frontline health responders, so nurses, doctors, anyone in the hospital, people who clean your rooms, people who mix up your medicines, they got first dibs. And this was the days, remember, when there was very scarce amount of vaccine. And so the general population had to wait for a little while. And after that came people in nursing homes and those who were working in nursing homes. And then they started rolling it out by age, starting with the oldest, 80 years old and older because they figured they were the most vulnerable, had the most, were the most at risk health wise, and they had to get protected first. So it went in tiers in descending order, 80, 75, 70, 60, 50. And it took a while to get down to 50, 40, 30. But now, as of this week, everyone over 16 is eligible to register and get the vaccine.
Was the state's approach dictated by any data, or was it just their instinct that that was the best way to do it, or that just how they decided was the best way to do it?
State health officials said it was decided by the data. I mean, they formed a committee of numerous health officials and community leaders, and they discussed the data, and they came to the determination that their way was the way to protect the state. And no one has really come forth that I know and said, you guys are all wet, and that was the worst possible way. They made a case, and they went with it, and they stuck to it.
Yeah, they received a lot of criticism over the last 3 months or so, as I recall. For example, not expanding eligibility early on to teachers, as some other states had, in the same way that they had for healthcare workers. But they held really firm on that.
They did. And a lot of teachers raised a ruckus. They said, we're in schools. A lot of them were. We're in small rooms, many of them without windows, with a lot of people where a virus can spread. And they thought the state's approach was completely wrong, and that teachers and perhaps some other occupations needed to be carved out an exception and get their vaccine near the front of the line. But the state said, nope, older people first, long-term facility patients first, and then, you know, we'll finally get to you. And the teachers had to wait.
So now we're, as I think we just said, we're at the point where anybody over the age of 16 is eligible.
They are. They're eligible. They can register. But for example, my son is 21 and he was just made eligible a couple of days ago. He registered right away. But the soonest he can get in was first week of May. So I think the state said within, on the first day by noon, almost 100,000 people had registered. So there's going to be a wait.
So let's take a quick overview of the rollout so far. And this is just stuff that I got off of the state's dashboard. You know, I would think that if nothing else comes out of this pandemic, is that the state is going to be really good at making dashboards because there are so many of them measuring so many things. So there are more than 500 vaccination clinics in the state. The first dose of vaccine was administered in Indiana on December the 14th. Mm-hmm. As of March 31st, there were about 1,134,000 fully vaccinated people in Indiana. Now that is, according to the dashboard, nearly 21% of the 5.3 million people who are eligible, those aged 16 and over. And then there were an additional about 1.6, 1.7 million people who had received their first dose but needed a second dose. So let's compare Indiana's progress. The number of ways that you can do it. What if we just look at it in terms of the percentage of the population age 18 and older with at least one dose of vaccine? How does Indiana rank among all the states?
On that score, Indiana is not great. They're sixth worst. You hate to say worst because they've gotten shots in over, as you say, a million people. They're sixth lowest. You would say that 44 other states did better. So Indiana had 32.4% of its population over 18 with at least one dose as of March 30th, according to the CDC. Only Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, and the District of Columbia had inoculated fewer people as a percentage of the population.
Now, I mean, that sounds pretty bad, but is that sort of deceiving? Is one of the reasons that we measured that way because of the methodical way that we've been vaccinating backwards from the age ranks?
It is. And first of all, being sixth worst is not that bad because it's still 32% of the population of people 18 and older with at least one dose. 32.4% is not that far lower than the national median of 37.6%. So we're not way, way off the charts. We're all pretty close together. But yes, because we've been focusing on the older age groups, when you compare an entire population over 18, we just haven't gotten down to that age group. you know, with shots in the arms until a couple of days ago. So that's why we're not scoring that well on that large group.
You know, something just occurred to me, and I don't know if you looked at it this way. I've noticed in our daily reports of, you know, vaccinations and infections and deaths, I mean, we're down to single digits in daily deaths. Is the state saying that, you know, well, that's because that we focused on, you know, the most vulnerable populations first?
That's a good question. I don't know if I've heard them say that. They are pleased that the numbers are low. We had just one death yesterday, I believe, compared to, you know, 3-4 months ago when there were dozens of people a day dying and the hospitalization rate was, I think it was in the hundreds, and the cases were in the thousands and were much, much lower on all those.
So if we evaluate Indiana, then in terms of its own goal of getting the older and most vulnerable people vaccinated first, how does Indiana compare to other states?
Indiana is right in the middle. Indiana scores 22nd, I believe. It's only two off the median, which is about 73%. We're at 72%. So Ohio and Kentucky and Michigan, those neighboring states, they're all doing a little worse, while Illinois, Maryland, Washington, Delaware, and some other states are doing better.
So if we look at some other metrics, how is the state doing in terms of the percentage of vaccine that it has received, that it actually is being administered? I think the term of art for that is getting it into people's arms.
Right. And that's the most critical, most closely watched metric for a lot of people. And we're doing really well. We're above the median nationally at 82%. The median is 81%, but that kicks us up like four states above the median. So, you know, we've done a really good job of taking what we've had, getting it to clinics, getting it into people's arms faster than maybe 30 other states. So Indiana has something to be proud of on that score.
And we're continually getting vaccine, right? It's not like everybody got the same amount of vaccine at the same time and said, here's everything you need, get it into people's arms as fast as you can.
It's kind of lumpy. It goes up and down. Some weeks, state health officials say we've gotten plenty and we're getting more by the week. And sometimes it's like, ooh, suddenly we didn't get that much, as much as we needed. We need to look into this. So as of March 30th, Indiana didn't get as much as it should have. Actually, it was second worst in the nation on a per capita basis. Only Utah got less per 100,000 residents. Indiana officials were kind of flummoxed a week or two ago on the conference call trying to explain why, saying they noticed it but didn't have an answer. That changed during the most recent press conference when they said they got a boost in the federal allocation. So when we were getting about 300,000 doses a week, now we're getting this week 405,000 doses. So a good kick, and hopefully Indiana will go up, you know, in its rankings and get as much as it needs. The state has always complained we need more, we need more, we need more. We've got a great network. We've got 400 plus sites. We've got nurses, pharmacists lined up, and things are running pretty smoothly. We can handle as much as you can give us. So that's really not Indiana's fault that we're not getting as much. It would be Indiana's fault if it was sitting somewhere and not getting into people's arms in the state.
It sounds like, I mean, having listened to some of these press conferences, that it's kind of mysterious even to the state officials about why they get, how much they get, and when they get it.
Yeah, it is mysterious. I'm trying to find a good answer, but they haven't given us one. I don't know if they have one.
So I was looking at the state dashboard for vaccinations, where the state breaks down the data a dozen different ways. One of the ways is the number of people who are getting the two dose series, meaning either the Pfizer or the Moderna, and how many are getting the one dose, which is the Johnson & Johnson. And it was really striking to me how few people are getting the Johnson & Johnson. In the last month, on days when between 40,000 and 60,000 doses of vaccine are being administered, like a day, rarely, if ever, are more than 4,000 of them Johnson & Johnson. And that was surprising to me, because I remember when they approved it and it just sounded like this was going to revolutionize everything. It was one dose and everyone kept talking about how we're just going to get that thing out here. And this is now we've hit the fast lane. is there any particular reason why we don't see a lot of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine yet?
When you look at the running totals, yeah, it's a very small part of the overall mix. I was surprised when I looked at that a day or two ago as well. While you have over a million of Pfizer and Moderna doses administered here, you have only maybe 60,000 doses of Johnson & Johnson overall, yet it's picking up and it's increasing as a part of the mix. In fact, it's being used exclusively in these mass vaccination clinics that are rolling out around the state, including big ones at the Motor Speedway in Indianapolis and up in Gary. State officials also just announced that they had gotten quite a big shipment of J&J this week. In fact, it was bigger than either Pfizer or Moderna. So we'll see if that continues. Although there was that factory incident in Baltimore recently that is causing a delay of future shipments of J&J. So that could be a problem going forward.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too, because that news of that just came out yesterday, which for folks at home was last Thursday or last Wednesday. So there's some kind of mix up. They mixed the wrong ingredients, or they mixed them the wrong way. It ruined up to 15 million doses. It's going to delay shipment of vaccine to some states. And the first thing that I thought of, and apparently you thought of too, was, you know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is the one that is being used at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway starting today and for 16 subsequent days. And I think you checked in with the state to see whether or not this was going to affect how the Speedway is going to be able to, you know, take care of its patients.
Exactly. You know, when you have 6,000 people a day coming to the Speedway over multiple days this month, and Johnson & Johnson is the one dose that's going to be, or the one brand that's going to be administered, you have to wonder, is that going to be a problem? But State Health Department gave me a very short statement that it had enough vaccine on hand, and it didn't see any problems with getting the Speedway folks all inoculated. Plus, as I said, that J&J was the largest percentage of the mix of the last shipment. So we'll see.
So at the rate we're vaccinating Hoosiers right now, do we have a sense of how long it's going to be before we get a critical mass of people who are fully vaccinated?
Different people say different things on this. There's a data analyst who works, who's a professor of economics up at IU at the Gary campus, who's studied and sliced the data very carefully and done some projections. And he thinks that we're going to get to 80% of our population with vaccines by August. Remarks from the state have not given up a specific date, but they've hinted it could be sooner. And now that things are ramping up at full speed with all these mass clinics opening around the state, there are mobile units crisscrossing certain regions of the state. We're getting larger and larger amount of shipments. The hospitals, which are the largest outlets and have set up numerous clinics all over the state, some of them are saying that they might be in business as late as the end of the year. Some are saying that they think they'll wind down their clinics by summer and turn the job over to doctors and health centers. So there's just, it's all over the board, really. Mm-hmm.
So here's a $64,000 question. John Russell, when will the pandemic be over?
Oh my God, that's way above my pay grade. When will it be over?
Are you going to have a July 4th celebration with your immediate family, as the president would like you to?
Actually, I'm making plans to visit my sister in Maine in June. My wife and I and my sister and her family will have all been vaccinated by then. I'm praying that that makes, you know, our interactions safe. When will the pandemic be over, though? You know, this is the first one I've lived through. I don't know how quickly they wind down. Get your shot, wait 2 weeks, and still be careful. Okay. And we'll see.
Well, hey, thanks so much for making time and explaining all this for me today. I really appreciate it.
My thanks again to John Russell. If you'd like to read more about the state's vaccine rollout and get feedback from the folks who have been through the process so far, you can check out John's story on the front page of the latest issue of IPJ. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few other strong stories I want to draw to your attention. The biggest show in college basketball might be leaving Indianapolis on Monday night, but don't expect downtown hotels to head back into hibernation. Mickey Shuey reports on the extensive slate of meetings, sporting events, and expositions scheduled for downtown through the rest of the year, and we'll likely get a heat check on Indy's stint hosting March Madness by how many more events sign on. Also in this week's issue, Greg Andrews details the epic legal brawl between the partners who opened Pier 48 Fish House and Oyster Bar in the Hyatt Place Hotel downtown. Among other allegations, one side is accused of taking more than 60 pounds of beef and seafood from the restaurant. And Susan Orr reports that efforts to liquidate the assets of Indianapolis-based Celadon Group have run out of gas. The trucking company's bankruptcy case has come to an end, and most of its creditors have been left empty-handed. And again, you can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say, it's quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to ibj.com and click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.